Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Hi, everybody. How you doing? What's happening? What's shaking? What's going on? Well, what's going on this end is November 11th from 4 to 6 p.m. I'm doing a presentation with Lindsay Brost. Actually, it's now Lindsay Lewis, on empathic listening. And this two-hour workshop will help you make meaningful connections using the art of deep listening. This two-hour workshop is at Lifetime Fitness in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, and I'll have the information on the show notes. But we're going to begin with reflective exercises to help you go inward. You'll learn the ins and outs of empathic listening. You know, sometimes people say, oh my God, I've been listening so hard and so deeply that I'm exhausted and wiped out and I don't have any energy. I can't even listen to people anymore. What do you think, Tim?
I don't think I've ever listened that hard in my life. Is this? Can I show up at this thing? I think I might need some help.
Yeah. Oh, great. I think that'd be great. You'll learn some new language, and you'll get a chance to practice some empathic listening skills that you can use immediately with Michelle.
She has listened a lot.
This is your gift to her.
Yeah.
There you go. So it's $25 for Lifetime Fitness members and $30 for those who aren't. So you've just heard in the background today's guest. Hey, Tim Colletti, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Well, great. Since early childhood, Tim has been absorbed with making music, taking up the guitar at age 6, forming his first band at age 14, and playing professionally for over half his life. Tim has created two separate but connected careers in the music industry. This is what I just totally love, because you're passionate about music. How can you make money and then also go after your dream? It's pretty cool.
It is very cool. I'm a lucky person. I charted the right path.
Yeah. That's really great. And how did you manage to do that?
You know, I always knew at a very young age that music is what I wanted to do, somehow, some way. Everyone has light bulb moments. My first light bulb moment was when I was 8. My mom and dad were nice enough to let me watch the Paul Lynde Halloween special in October of 1976. Okay. And I saw this band called Kiss.
My head
exploded, and I recall... You know, we're talking, this is 40 years ago. I remember that moment.
I love Gene Simmons.
Yes. Yeah. I'm an Ace Frehley guy, actually.
Oh, okay.
Because
oh,
I was a guitar
cool
player.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I started playing guitar at 6, I was inspired by the show Hee Haw. I know, a little diverse. Roy Clark was my first guitar hero, and I used to sit on my dad's lap. My older brother, who's a musician as well, we used to sit on my dad's lap and watch Hee Haw, and the little cartoon pigs would... The animated cartoon pigs would go across the screen. And I remember thinking, I want to do that. That's the coolest thing I've ever seen. And then 2 years later, I discover Kiss, and I have a little bit of money, you know, from gifts, and I go buy my first album, which was Kiss Alive 2. And looking at it and hearing it and hearing the power and all that, it just changed my life. It literally did. And that set me on that path, that course of making music that speaks to masses.
Yeah.
What can I do to get in front of people and share what's inside me? And you know, high school bands and through college and college bands and the ups and downs and the trials and tribulations of a semi-touring musician. You know, I never spent my life or a period of my life on the road, as they call it. I was always very grounded. So the tours that would go on would be a couple weeks and you come home and things like that. But all the way through this process, realizing that you can make a living and you can have a job and you can service and have these creature comforts. I can own a house and I can have kids and I can be a soccer coach and I can do all these different things as well as play music. And the whole creation of that is making decisions at a young age and then setting yourself down that path.
Yeah.
And staying focused on what do I really want to achieve and not getting distracted. So that's really how I kind of got to where I was or where I am, I guess, today.
But yeah.
It's a series of decisions that need to be made. And you sit and you think and you analyze, you make the right decision and you move forward and you believe in your dream and you continue focusing on that. That's how I'm sitting here today.
So you're also a brand director for National French. So you've got your own band.
Yes.
And you perform locally.
Yeah, and this band performs in about the 5-6 state region. So
okay.
Primarily in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, North to South Dakota. We're talking about reaching out to Illinois, but you know, that's a long way to drive.
Yeah.
I'm no spring chicken anymore. So.
And how many musicians are in your band?
There's four of us. And you know, the best way I can describe our band is we are an American rock band. The band's name is Arena. I won't get into full marketing mode yet. We're an American rock band. We write music that is catchy. It's straightforward. It's influenced primarily by the music that we listened to growing up. If you want to call it arena rock, the Kisses and the Cheap Tricks and the stuff like that.
Yeah, I call it true rock and roll.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, guitar-based rock and roll. And I like to say that our singer reminds me of Adele. So if you have a band like Cheap Trick with Adele listening or being the singer, that's who we are.
So the audience is going to have a chance to listen to more than you can chew. Can you tell us a little bit about that before we tune in?
Yeah. So we were, my partner Ted, the bass player in our band, the two of us, we write all the music together as a group, but Ted and I kind of show up and present ideas. He's the bass player, I'm the guitar player. And we had 9 of the 10 songs done on the album, and we're like, we need another song. And it's kind of a funny story if you listen to interviews with these famous musicians where some of their greatest songs were what they called throwaway songs.
Yeah.
A song that they just threw together, and it's just kind of magical, and that's what this song was. And Linda, who will write many of the lyrics, her and Ted write lyrics together, she came up with this idea of...
What's her last name?
Linda Bullock.
Okay.
And Ted Bullock.
Okay.
And yes, they're married.
You get a package deal there.
You get the package deal. She had this idea of a song about a guy kind of scoping the dating websites looking for easy pickings.
Yeah.
And the concept of the song is the girl kind of turning it over on him. And you can hear in the beginning, you know,
edging another.
Yeah, you thought you were going to put in a notch on your bedpost.
Right.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. My profile looks so innocent. You had to have a go. An invitation followed, I said, let's take it slow. With a hook, line, and sinker, your head went over your heels. The wool pulled over your eyes, so now you know how it feels. 100,000 hours, you in my rearview mirror. Nothing's gonna stop me, cause you know I have no fear. And you start to wonder,
you can chew.
That's typical rock and roll song.
It is. And it comes in at like 3.5 minutes, and it's actually one of our more popular songs, and it's gotten some pretty interesting reviews out of Europe, where we had hired a company to help promote the album over there. One guy said it's, you know, the perfect sing-along song, and we didn't even think of it that way, but sure enough, you know, so.
Yeah, oh, cool. Now, Mike Cabea is going to join us.
Hey, Tim. Hi, Mike.
Don't you worry. She saw me getting excited about what you're talking about, and she's like, you should jump in. I'm like, yay.
Jump on in. We can talk music as long as you want.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Right, because, well, Mike, tell us your connection to music. And
well, okay, let's talk about our connection first. Nancy and I met how many years now? 7 years?
Oh, my gosh.
At least.
Yeah,
seven years. 8 years.
8 years.
In a church, and she was part of this choir and playing the piano. And I just come from back home at the time.
Republic of Congo.
From the Congo. And I would just sit there and watch them do the thing. Until recently, 5 years ago, when we moved to a different church, and I was like, okay. So there were a lot of African music being played, etc. We had nobody to play piano on a regular basis. I'm like, okay, I gotta take this. So I started playing piano. And I'm still doing that with Nancy.
He's learned, you know, everything by ear. He doesn't read music.
Yeah.
And he's always tinkering, you know, listening to the choir. And the whole choir sings without music.
Yeah. So but I get the advantage of playing in a classical choir back home. You know, I think that's kind of helped tune my earring a little bit. And then played at Minnesota Gospel Choir with Sam Moore. So all of that probably helped, you know, shape my earring and stuff.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
But I'm highly interested in what you're saying here because, you know, I started myself getting on the way to, you know, publishing my music. I write music too. I just published a couple of months ago, was it in February? Just one song. I'm with TuneCo as a producer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they will put your music all over the place.
Sure.
You know, iTunes, Apple Music, YouTube, some whatever music, etc. But you know, I have tons of questions to ask about that. With only one song being published right now, you know.
His wife Sylvie is the choir director. She's got an awesome voice. Their son, who's 17 now?
16.
16 now? Yeah, soon to be 17.
He's a drum player.
Yeah, and he's got his own band.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
They have produced music before me. They have music on iTunes.
That's fantastic. I mean, what you're talking about there is something that has drastically changed in the industry in the past 20 years.
Yeah.
When we went in and recorded this record, we had found a young man who had numerous degrees in, or I should say certifications in Pro Tools, which is a software used to recording.
Yeah, yes.
Everyone's recording in their house now.
Yeah.
And it's fairly affordable to do so.
Absolutely.
Back when I was in my high school band and college bands and you wanted to record, it was $150 an hour and you went someplace and some guy had a big 2-inch reel-to-reel and, you know, they plug you in, they do whatever and the cost starts, you know, ramping up and ramping up. And now you can do it on your own. And the concept of music distribution has changed as well.
Absolutely.
So you're talking about, you know, you have one published song and you have it aggregated out on iTunes and what have you.
Yeah.
We chose a local company to aggregate for us. They didn't produce. We self-produced our own album. And like I was saying before, we were chatting before we started here, we chose to self-produce because we know what we know, and we had a vision. Collectively, the four of us in the band had a vision of what this album was going to sound like and what our songs were going to sound like. And we found a kid whose name is Jordan Way, and Jordan moved back out to Sioux Falls, but we're hoping that he moves back to Minneapolis because we're going to start recording again in about a year. And he did a fantastic job of taking out of us what we heard and putting it into a digital format that we could, you know, shape and mold and do whatever with. And the saying is, we know what we know. And we learned an awful lot about each other as we recorded this record.
Yeah. Things have become much easier. I do have a studio at home too, in my sitting room, pretty much. That's where I record everything. And it does sound very good, actually, when you do what you're doing.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I use Logic Pro and I've been using that for almost 10 years now. So it's got a bit of experience in there, you know, shaping the stuff. And today you pretty much do it yourself, mixing and even mastering.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can master. We had a company in Nashville master our album for us. We felt as though we wanted another set of ears on it.
Yes.
But that's still very affordable.
It's not very affordable.
It used to be.
No.
So, you know, you can get yourself a couple really good quality microphones and get someone who either educate yourself or find someone who knows what they're doing to sit behind a computer desk.
Yes.
And you can make your own record.
Absolutely.
And it can sound as good as anything that's getting pushed out there, you know, multi-million-dollar budgets.
Absolutely.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Done in the sitting room. About the music
industry. Done in the sitting room, and you cannot tell this has been recorded in a sitting room.
Yeah.
We literally recorded it. The entire record was recorded in the living room of Jordan's house.
Wow.
And, you know, you put up baffling and sound, you know, and soundproofing and things like that. But it was literally recorded in his house. And it's funny, we document, you know, social media, you have to document everything.
Yeah.
Little videos on Instagram and little this's and that's and whatever.
Yeah.
And you get, you know, people following you and they'd be asking like, what kind of recording studio has like a window in it? I'm like, it's Jordan's house. That's where we recorded this record.
Exactly.
So
it's like my podcast program here, right? We're in the studio, lower level of the house.
Exactly.
Yes. Why not?
It's made music so much easier it's made it such a broader, I don't want to call it an industry. That's not a fair term for it. Because again, most people who are recording and putting music out are doing it because it's an extension of who they are. They're not doing it necessarily for monetary gain or as a job.
Well,
it's
people
made it so easy.
Well, yeah, because musicians don't want to be controlled, just like entrepreneurs. And this has like opened up the whole field so that you can really produce your own music your own way and keep it pure to what it, you know, how you wrote it.
Yes. I completely agree with that. And you know, anyone who's out there writing their own music and has a vision, they already are an entrepreneur. Maybe they're not starting a full-fledged or what maybe my generation or my parents' generation would call an official business, but they are. They are entrepreneurs.
They're tinkering.
Because, yes, they're creating something that's their vision. They're packaging it, and they're sending it out and delivering a service to somebody. That, to me, encompasses what it is to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
You don't have to have an LLC. You know, we happen to, our band happens to be a corporation because we treat it like a business. But you have, you know, these 15-year-old kids who are doing YouTube videos in their house, you know, whether it's playing guitar or it's doing skateboard tricks or both of my boys are avid soccer players and they follow people who are doing all kinds of ball skills and tricks and stuff like this. That's an entrepreneurial spirit. Mm-hmm. These kids are saying, look what I have. I'm creating this information and I'm sharing it with you, and they have a vision. The whole realm of not just the internet but just digital technology has made the world a place where people can really, really express themselves so much more than they did, man, when I started playing guitar, when I started thinking about writing music and things. It's just inconceivable to record a record. Are you kidding me? That's only for the big guys.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's a wonderful tool, and it's something that I get very excited when I see young people expressing themselves and doing these kind of things. So it's really exciting. It's a great place to be right now. It really is.
Here's a question I have for you, one that's been disturbing me for a while. how now do you do to get people actually to buy your music?
You know, since you're transition from free listening to paid listening.
It's become very easy for me to sit down, write a song, record it, do everything, Photoshop everything, put it together. But how do you advertise about it? How do you get it to be known out there?
You know, one of the rules of music these days is that you have to be willing to give it away for free for people to be willing to buy it. It's just the marketplace. So, you know, both of my sons being 18 and just, you know, about to be 19 and about to be 16, you know, they look at me and they're like, I'm such a dinosaur. I am what I am. I'm a product of my environment, which was coming up in the music world of the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. But they're like, why would someone go buy an album? Why wouldn't you just record a song and put it online and let everyone listen to it? And you know, my instinct is to say, well, that's wrong. But that's how the new generation, the millennials, that's how they view this. This is, music is kind of a right to them. It's the shared expression. So we've found, and by no means are we selling tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of records, but we found that you have to share your music. Even to get a critic to review the record, they're going to ask, oh, where can I listen to it? Like, oh, well, we'll just ship you a CD for free. I'm like, no. Where can I listen to it for free? It's easy for me. I can listen to it in my car. I can listen to it at home. Great. So you aggregate, or which is a term for saying you take your digital content and you put it on all these streaming different websites, you know, Spotify and iTunes and Spreaker and SoundCloud and YouTube Music and all these different places, and that's where you have to go. And what we found is that, we realize that our demographic is people our age, and people our age are accustomed to buying music.
Yes.
So it's not difficult to sell your product, because, like I said, our demographic is, hey, where can I buy your CD? We've found that, you know, Spotify and these digital streaming places do pay you. They don't pay you an awful lot. So it's not really money that we count on. But we found that if we supply that to them, and you can go right to our website and you can click on a link and you can listen to our album for free. And if you like it, we hope that you buy it. If not, keep listening to it. That's kind of the methodology of music as a whole. Even some of the biggest touring bands that are out there really aren't making any money off of their recordings. Where they're making money is off of touring and merchandise and things like that. And that's just the shift. That's the new economy of the music industry. So how do you get to sell your record? Or how do you get people to buy it instead of just listening to it for free? You got to get out there and play it. You got to get it out there and play it in front of people. And when you can convey, just not orally, you know, when someone can see you performing it and feel you performing it, they're much more likely to actually buy it. And again, the demographic, you know, so we'll play some larger shows with a local band out of Minneapolis called Hairball, and we'll play shows in front of five or six, or we played in Lake Okoboji this summer in front of 10,000 people. And you get up and you play and you get off stage and you hope that you conveyed, and you get over to your merch booth and you stand there with your thumbs up going, come on, you know, this is how you support live music. So, but you have to get out and play it. That to me is the secret to actually getting someone to buy it. They're going to listen to it for free and they're going to love it. But get in front of them and get an opportunity to network face to face with your fan base or with fan base. Whomever's interested. Yeah. And that's where you make that connection.
So you mean you need to be taking some actual CDs there, some hard copies of music.
Have merch with you at all times. Oh. now comes the marketing spin.
Oh, yes, no,
merchandise is great. I mean, it's every opportunity in this world, every place you look is a branding opportunity. And that's one of the things that I learned, you know, and that I've layered into the business that I run, the company that I run as well, is every place you look. Yeah. Windmark Corporation is our parent company. Okay. Yep. And Windmark Corporation is the franchising parent of five retail brands, of which all five of our brands focus on the resale, the purchase and resale of used product. So everyone's familiar with Played Against Sports. They're our oldest brand. We also have Once Upon a Child, Plato's Closet, Style Encore, the last three being apparel-based brands. And then my brand, and I like to call it mine because I've been there for 25 years, but my brand of Music Around, where we buy, sell, and trade used and new musical instruments. Every place you go.
Your brand is Music Around.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Everywhere you go, every place you look, every impression in a Google search result, every place you look, there's an opportunity for you to impress your brand upon somebody. And that falls back on the importance of making sure you understand who your brand is so you can represent it well. And that's what I do with the band. We have an image. We have, I don't want to call it a package because that sounds, that sounds produced. But in a way it is. In a way it is. You have to be very sound in who you are and what you're doing, because there's so much noise out there. And if you try to follow trends and try, oh, well, look at that guy or look at that company, or, you know, they do this, so I should do that. Be a trendsetter, not a trend follower, and believe in what you are. And that's another side, by the way, I'm going to flip-flop. It's another way of getting people to buy your music, is be true to who you are. And as a famous musician named Lemmy Kilmister said, fly up the flagpole and see who salutes. believe in it, you know.
Wow. So.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So take us out with this podcast session with an explanation of Should I? Because we're going to end our session with playing that.
Okay. Should I is a song that Ted Bullock wrote with his first band I'm going to say close to 30 years ago. And all through the years, he's kind of carried this song with him in the different bands that he was in, and they did different reiterations of it. And really, he presented it to Arena and said, you know, here's this song. And we listened to the original recording of it, which was, you know, 20 some odd, 25, 30 years old. And it's this great song. We just needed to modernize it a little bit and, and added a couple things to it. The song is really, really kind of about the struggles, the decisions that people make, and they get themselves into a position where they're asking that question, should I? Should I do this? Should I not do this? And again, it's the inner turmoil that you know, we're a rock band. We don't get that deep. You know,
But it's beautiful the way it starts. The raindrops and, you know, just, it's lovely.
So, you know, and that's something that we consciously went into. The album starts with the thunderstorm and, and outros after our last song.
And
the idea was, it's not a thematic record, but we wanted to kind of create this environment of it begins here and it ends in the same place. It's like a circle that this music kind of takes us around. So, you know, the other part that's really cool is when you have it on repeat, the song that ends, it ties back into the first song, the storm never ends. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's right.
That was kinda one of those things we didn't think of, but it was like, wow, that's really cool.
If you have
it on repeat, it starts, the thunderstorm never stops. It just goes back into the first song. But we kind of consciously did that thematically, maybe not so much, but environmentally. There's no deep, like, oh, the rainstorm represents, you know, washing and cleansing your soul. It's none of that.
Yeah.
It's more of just setting a mood I mean, that's the best thing I could say about it. But like I said, the song Should I is a song that was presented to us, an older song, and we kind of themed it up and modernized it we open just about every show we do with that song. It opens our record, and it's a really solid song.
Cool. So when are you next playing? Where can people find you?
Oh, my goodness.
Performing next.
You know, our schedule is always updated at arenarocks.com. We're at facebook.com/arenarocks. We're on Twitter at @ArenaRocksMN. We're on Instagram at @ArenaRocksMN.
Okay.
I'm in full-on marketing mode now. I apologize.
need to apologize. Yeah. We have entrepreneurs on every week.
Yeah. We play. Part of being, what I was saying before, I think to me, one of the core foundational pieces of someone who is entrepreneuristic is that they totally 100% believe in what they're doing. Yeah. And it's the fly it up the flagpole and see who salutes. If you have something that you think is going to impact somebody else's life, put it out there and see how people react to it. And it's funny when I speak to young musicians who are like, oh, I'm not so sure I should really play something. Yes, play it in front of people. Yeah. It's rock and roll. It is what it is. It's the spirit of it. You don't have to be a great musician to go out there and show someone your spirit and believe in it.
Perform, I mean, the better you get.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Experience makes all the difference. But, you know, it's the believe in yourself and everyone else will believe in you because they won't have a choice. They'll be looking at you going, wow, this guy really believes in what he's doing up there. I'm going to take a listen to this.
Yeah.
You know? And that's where, like, I was talking about the jokes about, you know, asking a musician to talk about themselves is not a difficult thing to do. That's part of the job is you got to be able to talk it up a bit.
Absolutely. Well, this zoomed by quickly, and we've just scratched the surface. So can you come back for a second session?
Absolutely. I'd love to be able to talk about myself some more.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks, Mike, for your contributions. And we'll add you to the mic for our second show. He's saying yay on his side. And thanks for tuning in. We'll see everybody on Monday.